minimizing the financial and social costs of crime. Unless state government finds money to finance the community colleges, the public will be the victim. In 2015, there were still no accredited college classes available to the thousands of men at Illinois' maximum security prisons. The IDOC administration claimed it had no money for programs. If funding were the sole impediment, one would think prison wardens would welcome universities and professors willing to volunteer their time, raise money, and establish programs for free. Instead, the IDOC administration impedes any expansion of even the meager non-accredited programs at Stateville. Moreover, they allow IDOC staff to harass all involved to discourage professors from volunteering and students from enrolling. Students' class materials and projects are routinely destroyed or thrown out during shakedowns. Final projects are often confiscated. Graduations are arbitrarily canceled 90% of the time and not rescheduled. Teachers are routinely treated like suspects. Many have been arbitrarily banned from Stateville after being falsely accused of misconduct as a pretense to cancel courses or in an attempt to cancel an entire program. Supporting college and vocational programs means standing by our proclaimed ideals that everyone deserves a second chance, that people can change, and that people should be able to pursue the American dream of being able to rise up out of poverty. College courses are the single, nearly foolproof way of returning people to useful citizenship. The Alabama State Board of Education found that correctional education appears to be the number one factor in reducing the recidivism rates nationwide. Inmates who completed post-secondary degrees in prison in Alabama had only a 1% recidivism rate compared to 35% for the general population. In Maryland, 46% of people returned to prison within 3 years. But out of the 120 who left after receiving a college degree while inside, not a single one returned. James Gilligan found similar results when looking at the issue in Massachusetts. The most successful program of all, and the only one that has been 100% effective in preventing recidivism, was the program that allowed inmates to receive a college degree while in prison. Therefore, college courses are needed because they protect society. The denial of an education in prison compounds criminality for a couple of reasons. First, it sends a message that despite the state constitution, laws, and rhetoric about rehabilitation and second chances, people in prison are being told that they are not worth the expense of returning them to useful citizenship. This increases the likelihood that they will have little interest in acting in society's best interest upon release. Ostracize people and they won't want to join you. If society treats people like garbage, they can hardly expect them to act like angels. Second, it increases the likelihood that people released from prison will need to commit crimes in order to survive. After all, they've just been warehoused and kept in poverty for years or decades with no opportunity to gain any employable skills. College courses would also greatly increase institutional security. Men in the current non-accredited program at Stateville refrain from committing serious rule infractions for the specific reason of wanting to remain in the programs. Most lifers and long-termers, however, largely languish at Stateville. They have very few intellectual or creative outlets. Even if someone is never going to be released from prison, he or she should still have the opportunity to lead a productive, goal-oriented life inside a prison. They shouldn't be forced to spend 22 hours per day in a cell with little to do for decades on end. Uneducated prisoners are more angry, frustrated, and even suicidal, if not homicidal, than educated prisoners. Additionally, there's a monetary return on investment. The John Howard Association found that academic programs save the state more money than they cost. Society has a moral obligation to return people to useful citizenship. really affect the poor. America has also shuttered most of its mental health facilities and has now basically criminalized being mentally ill. The poor are the least likely to have access to mental health treatment, as they are the least able to afford it. They are also less able to understand and follow the law. Currently, 56% of the U.S. prison population has a mental health problem. The only two remaining maximum security prisons in Illinois that house general population inmates are Menard and Stateville Correctional Centers. In 2010, the John Howard Association reported that with no programs, people in Menard were simply being warehoused. On the other hand, while programs in Stateville were severely lacking, Stateville did allow some volunteers to come in and offer non-accredited college-level classes. In the intervening years, Stateville has had relatively few staff assaults and lockdowns are short. Meanwhile, at Menard, violence has exploded. It has gotten so bad that the chaplain now preaches from behind a razor wire top fence, and guards hide in protective cages in the Chow Hall, Law Library, and elsewhere. Two main differences distinguish Menard from Stateville. First, the aforementioned programs in Stateville and lack thereof in Menard. People in Stateville at least have some opportunity to get out of the cell, converse with academics, work towards a goal, and contribute to discourses on societal ills. People in Menard don't have that. Second, guards in Menard have, for decades, been extremely disrespectful to inmates and hound the population over every petty rule infraction, most of which are completely unnecessary to security. In Stateville, on the other hand, guards used to often overlook such rule violations that don't affect security. This helped to reduce stress and rage. In 2006, as part of its campaign for responsible priorities, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, the Guards Union, lambasted the IDOC in a report on failing grades, the decline in educational opportunities for Illinois inmates. Ask Me argued that such a decline makes both prisons and society less safe. After the explosion of violence at Menard, the administration in 2014 finally started bringing back some of the abandoned programs. In recent years, both Mayor Rahm Emanuel and President Barack Obama have made headlines with their remarks advocating for free community college education for all. For the safety and security of both prisons and society, it is imperative that all includes incarcerated people as well. Even if that doesn't come to fruition, prisons should work towards greatly expanding all programming if the IDOC is truly interested in institutional security and returning people to useful citizenship. That's the conclusion of the paper. But I wanted to add, in the intervening years since I wrote this, here in Stateville there have been a few positive developments. One is that DePaul University's Inside Out program has expanded to three courses, which now offer college credits, and Northwestern University is attempting to bring a four-year college degree grading program here with, I think it's called the Barn Initiative. Also, criminal justice and sentencing and corrections, there's been a sea change due to all the neuroscience research showing the extreme plasticity of the brains of not only juveniles, but young adults aged 18 to 24, which is encouraging state corrections departments and policymakers to look at rehabilitation over retribution for those categories of offenders.
Thank you so much, Joe. Violent offenders. offenders or those people that are deemed violent offenders. And of course, if you could extrapolate upon, you know, what do you think about this category of violent offender? So I'm sort of giving you an opportunity to talk about it and also the importance of education for those who are deemed violent offenders, even though you and I both know it's a false category.
Okay, that's right. Like I said, for numerous reasons, you can't split people into violent offenders or not violent offenders. People who commit crimes, it's not like, people are walking around and like, well, I'm not going to do that because that's a violent crime, but I'm going into this because it's not violent. And, every study shows that violent offenders are actually the ones with the lowest recidivism rate. So even like, if you think of the worst violent offenses, rape and murder, those are the ones with the lowest recidivism rate. When they get out of prison, they're really not likely to reoffend. And while they're in prison, a lot of times they're denied good time for taking educational programs. They have sentences that are so long that all the short-termers are prioritized for whatever educational courses are available. So some guys will sit 20, 30 years without being able to get their GED, and then they're let go at, 50, 60, 70 years old. And a lot of them are illiterate. I mean, what are you going to do when you're 50 years old? Most of your family's gone. You're illiterate. There's really nothing, nothing you can do to provide for yourself and get established and everything. And with the recidivism rate, every time there's a budget crisis, they talk about reducing the prison population, but it's always the short-termers who have the highest recidivism rates, and they're always letting guys out real quick without rehabilitating them either. And so you're releasing people before you can give them any programs, and they have a 75% recidivism rate, but it's sold to the public as, it's cost-effective and we're protecting society because we're releasing the non-violent offenders and not the violent offenders, which is counterintuitive, but those non-violent offenders are more likely to get out and commit crimes in general, not just non-violent crimes, but violent crimes as well.
Thank you so much. I'm bringing up someone for the next question now.
Hi, my name is Carmela, and I have a sort of two-part question. First off, I wonder what kinds of classes, like what kinds of subjects or what kinds of subject matter, what kinds of classes are I guess, sought after in Stateville and do people really like? And then the other part of the question, there's a lot of people in this room that have taught college classes in prisons or would want to. So I wonder if you have advice for how to do that, how to be a good educator for people in a place like Stateville.
Okay, the first part of your question is, it's right now we have like the non-accredited courses, which is PNAP. They're mostly like social justice course. They have some art, some poetry, but most of them are dealing with writing, and they're all dealing with social issues basically. And
which was what can we do as educators? And so it, I think we'll reflect upon that. That'll be great. I have another.
One other thing.
Yes.
One other angle to that, which was my main point where I was going to answer that, is a lot of times you have to be able to get over the bureaucracy of an individual prison so that it's like here in Illinois, the state capital is Springfield. So we always call it the IDOC administration Springfield. So the teachers here, they're at the whim of any random officer that's in the front gate and doesn't want to let them bring in materials or whatever. So if you can establish something with the IDOC administration that gives you clearly written rules and powers that, like, if an officer is saying you can't do this, if you can go over his head to somebody else and say, well, I've been approved to do this, that is going to help facilitate your entry into the prison and how productive in general you are, because you can stop a lot of the arbitrary cancellation of classes like that. You can stop your materials from being confiscated and stuff. You know, if you have somebody that you can go to or that the average guard has to listen to, but most of them don't, you know, they're looking at ways to kick out the teachers, and, you know, they're not interested in facilitating this. They're mad that they have to run program lines, so it's like it's a lot of power dynamics at play. So the more you can get above that, the more successful you'll be.
Thank you so much, Joe. We have another question here.
Hi, Joe. Eric Antheman. I've taught in prisons for quite a while, so I'm very sympathetic and inspired by what you said. You used the word, you qualified the word citizen a lot with useful citizen. And so I just...
You have 1 minute left.
Well, I was going to ask what you meant by that. And the reason why is because, to me, the language of usefulness is the language of capitalism and a lot of the structures that precisely create a lot of the problems that have to do with incarceration. So maybe just in the 40 seconds, say what's meant by useful citizen.
I'll call back and answer.
Yeah, okay. So Joe, what we'll do is, if you'll call back, I know we have now 30 seconds, then we'll answer this last question, then you're gonna listen to the other panels like we talked about, and then we'll have a broader conversation, okay?
Okay.
Okay. All right.
So he's going to call back. Thanks, everyone. So Joe is serving a life without parole in Statesville. He was originally at TAMS Correctional Facility, which they closed 2 years ago because of its terrible conditions, and served a large part of the sentence in solitary confinement. So what we're passing around, he wrote a book while inside, and so there's a flyer for that. He also is writing another book and has written a number of op-ed pieces for Truth Out and other organizations. So anyway, we can support that.
I just want to say, too, if anyone has more questions for Joe, like,
I had a second point, but I didn't want
to. Time to talk, right? Like,
yeah.
He's also, yeah, and the one paper is shorter, so
yeah.
He's in touch with that. Dad, can you record this on your phone?
Did I say again?
Daddy, can you record this on your phone?
I'm still recording it too.
Oh,
okay.
No,
okay.
Can you like video it?
Okay.
Welcome. Hey, Joe. All right, we're back. Okay, useful citizen, what do you think? Oh, wait, I need to put you on speaker. I messed up. Okay, we're good.
Okay, the reason I use the term useful citizenship is because that's what's in our Illinois Constitution and the Code of Corrections. Now, I wouldn't want to try and define what useful citizenship is as far as like these factors only qualify as useful citizenship. I just think that I think we would all agree that you're not a useful citizen.
second one, just real quick, this might be a long answer. I mean, you mentioned rightly that in 94, so this is the phenomena of the lack of federal or state support is not just a conservative thing. You know, 94 was under Clinton, and, you know, in the last few years of the Obama administration, some of that was coming back. I guess maybe personally, but in general, what do you guys think about Trump and the possibilities for new education programs or anything at all? I mean, it seems to me pretty daunting. And how are you coping with that? And what other opportunities are there, given the specter of Trump's America?
I really didn't want to get too much into politics, but the fact that say I'm progressive and I'm not a fan of Trump, and he's decimated all the positive stuff that Obama was trying to accomplish with criminal justice reform, and you know, well, not all of it, but a lot of it. So I would not be surprised if he reversed Obama's little kind of backdoor way to get some funding, like some Pell Grant funding for college courses. It doesn't affect us here because in order to qualify for that, you have to be within 5 years of release. And here at Stateville, we're all lifers and long-termers. So that doesn't affect us. But as far as opportunity, it's really like there's no state or federal push for funding as of yet to, you know, provide us opportunities. Myself, I've been able to take four college correspondence courses just because of an organization called New Day Prison Ministries, which is, I think it's defunct now, but they provide tuition for those four courses while I was in Pan Supermax. And then, you know, I can only take non-profit courses. And then the stuff that's coming in here, it's like privately funded and volunteers, you know, so it's, we're hopeful in that we see people are starting to come around and do stuff on their own without state assistance. And so that's inspiring, and that's, you know, gives us hope. But how long will it last?
Thank you so much. We've got one more question, and then what we'll do is we'll move on to the other panelists, and you can listen in. And I know the beep thing will go off. That's okay. Then you can call back. All right. So here's your last question.
Hi, Joe. This is Brandon. Thanks for sharing. It's a follow-up to the question about useful citizenship, and I found your paper to be overwhelming with your evidence and hopeful in a lot of ways. And I want to just ask you about just your personal feelings. You really conclude with this powerful note, if, and it's a big if, because that's what my question is about, if the IDOC is truly interested in institutional security and returning people to useful citizenship, right? Here's all the things they can do. And I was just wondering, how do you feel? Like, so in the face of all this evidence about what, about the power of education, about the just minimal changes in investments they can make to help everybody, is this incompetence? Is this them falling down on the job, or potentially malice, that they really are not interested in returning people to that vision of useful citizenship that you just talked about?
Yeah, I definitely think it's more on the design side. You know, I mean, the average citizen probably doesn't think about it. They just, you know, heard sound bites like, why does my kid have to pay for education when prisoners get it for free or whatever when Pell Grants got, you know, stripped and everything. So they probably didn't really go into it. But I do think, like, people who are behind policy, they know what works and doesn't work. You know, people in the else, it comes along whenever you talk about prisoners, because a popular image of a criminal is a young black male, and, there's no denying this. We live in a racist society and sexist society, and, there's a lot of stuff going on that it might not make it into the policy documents in literal words, like, oh, we're doing this to keep blacks oppressed or something like that. But that's, what's a big part of what's behind stuff like, let's not offer them any education programs or college programs, even though it would make society safer. And then we'll also say that we're making society safer by just releasing the people that are most likely to reoffend instead of, doing concrete policy to make sure they don't reoffend.
So just, I'm sure we're out of time, but just a quick follow-up. Thinking about what you just said, it's one thing if it's incompetence, then we can give you information, we can educate, the system, but if you think it's by design, do you have any thoughts about what next, and what do we do if it's designed that way?
I mean,
it's a big question. But.
Right, so you got to take it all back to who's doing the designing, who's in charge of those rules. You got to get people who are more amenable to education programs in office. When a new governor, make sure the governor wants to appoint full program directors and wardens and everybody else, and then that changes the system. Implement it into policy so that it's hard to overturn, rewrite the code of corrections or the administrative code and say, this is our objective, and for that reason, we're implementing these rules, and people have to be out of their cells so much time, and if they want to go to class, there's space available to them. And here's how we're going to provide the resources to offer those classes. It's not something that you can just snap your fingers and change, but it is stuff that, if enough people push for it, it's also not impossible to change either.
Thank you so much, Joe. And I'm breaking my own rule. I'm going to ask one more question just in case we get cut off. You know me, I like to break the rules. Oh, shoot, this is being recorded. Just kidding, government. All right, this is a very intentionally broad question. You know me, but I think you also know that you're picking up what I'm putting down. Do you think that if people that are incarcerated want education, that there's a pushback on that on the inside, some sort of retaliation, broadly construed, take that as you want?
I couldn't understand the last part of it. Broadly construed what?
Meaning, do you think if people that are incarcerated want education, or out of your experience, if you want to say so, and you can also say no comment, do you think that there's retaliation on behalf of the administration and the guards for those who want education?
There's, it all depends. It's like how vocal you are and, I'll say this. It's not so much individually targeted retaliation. Of course, for if you're doing stuff like I'm doing writing and stuff, there is individual retaliation and stuff. But it's also that, certain guards, especially if they're pro-program. I mean, even amongst guards and administrators, you're going to have people that think programs are a great idea and people that think, hell no, lock them all in their cells forever and I don't have to worry about them, So, but the overall guards they don't want to run the line. It's like, they do retaliate against the programs in general, the arbitrarily cancel classes, some guards, if they don't like them, they'll excessively frisk, the women volunteers who are coming in, and, I've had teachers show up in tears in class, so there is some retaliation against the teachers and stuff, especially, if a teacher comes in and they're, more vocal than the others about that, the prison is treating her students poorly or his or her students. tell me to shut the fuck up and sit down, you know?
Yeah, thank you so much. Yes. No, that's okay. That's why we get along so well. I think that's so important from what we've talked about and other people talk about too, is, you know, guards are people too. They're also in the system. And getting to know what that retaliation looks like or if it looks like from your point of view on the inside. We sort of only imagine it. And sometimes we take it too far and sometimes we don't take it far enough. So thank you so much, and we're going to move on to our next participant. And if you, when it beeps, you can just call back.